Charles Woolley across Australia.
Okay, we're on 1300 655 141 on 50 stations across the heartland. No stranger to controversy, the family, formerly known as the Children of God, has been at the centre of various headline-grabbing reports over the last decade, and I can remember quite a few 60 Minutes stories. The real truth of what happens in these cults is often hard to unearth. In a controversial new book out now, three sisters who were robbed of their childhood at the hands of this community before finally escaping share their tale in an honest and frightening account entitled Not Without My Sister. One of the authors, Christina Jones, is on the line now. G'day, Christina.
G'day.
What your book informs us about, again, in the present context of terrorism in Britain with the connections to Australia, is that belief systems are such appallingly dangerous things.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, with authoritarian cults and, you know, it's very extreme. It's all or nothing, you know, and they do a lot to sort of brainwash the members into complying, you know, fully with every diktat
and
the cult leader.
And I imagine that communism, be it Islamism, be it any of the isms, including the Children of God, that the techniques are fairly similar. Because people right now are amazed that doctors could be brainwashed into the kind of behaviour that we're seeing in terms of the terrorist attempts. But you know only too well that anyone could be brainwashed.
That's right.
From your experience, I'm just trying to link the two things, from your experience, how does it happen? How does a brainwashing take place?
Well, like you say, you know, anybody is susceptible, but particularly if one is quite vulnerable or, you know, at a low sort of point in their life, and especially young people who are sort of just starting out and are just sort of left their parents' authority and it can be quite daunting, but yes, when somebody's sort of vulnerable, it's an emotional pull, you see. That if you meet some members, it can be quite an experience that sort of, it's like sort of love bombing. It's like they target you with a lot of love and attention, and they make you feel very special, like, you know. And you think, yes, well, you know, it's very sort of seducing.
This is a thing, as you say, of the emotions and not of the intellect.
That's right, yes. It's an emotional pull. And so, I mean, and by that time, you know, they're your friends. They're telling you that they're happy to, you know, they're with you all the time, constantly. And then what happens is a process of gaining complete control of you. So basically, you know, they will say that you have to reject your former friends, your family, parents, brothers, sisters, everybody, basically, the world. And it's a gradual possession into that world that they've created for you, where basically they are the parent and the cult leader is the parent. And, you know, and everything that they ask you to do, you know, they demand total obedience from you.
Tell me the story, your story, the story of three little girls who are absorbed into this extraordinary situation. Explain how it happened.
Well, my mother and father, they were recruited in. They'd met the group in the UK when they were very young. Our mother was 15 and our father was 19. And they were quite idealistic. My mother had been to Sunday school and had been a teacher. So, you know, she thought these were sort of Christian people, and she didn't have any sort of awareness of what their real intent was, in many senses. And so we were born into the group. You know, we never joined. We weren't sort of members. And we happened to be born there. And obviously our lives were controlled from day one. And our life was basically to serve the Lord, to serve the group. And that was, and that meant living a very strict regime, and basically trying to save the world for Jesus. So we'd be out in the streets witnessing daily, gathering donations and giving out the leaflets of the group, the message.
So you were expected to raise money?
Yes, and save souls for the kingdom of heaven. I mean, this is an end-time group. You know, they predicted that Jesus was coming back in 1993. So we never thought we would actually live to see adulthood.
You would have been taken up in the rapture.
Yes, that's right, yeah.
So you're always
expecting... And we were terrified of it. Our life was full of fear and dread. And, you know, we lived on survival mode from day to day.
I've read a bit about this. And, of course, yeah. the fear of the rapture for children is that if you haven't been good, you won't be taken. So if you come home and find mum and dad unexpectedly out, you think it's happened and they've gone and you've been left behind.
Yeah.
It's incredibly mentally cruel. Did you know, I mean, how do you know, how isolated are you from the rest of the community that you just think that this is normal?
Well, when you talk one thing all your life, you know, one perspective, you believe it. You know, when you talk black is white and white is black, that's you trust your parents, you trust the people around you in a sense when you're very young, and that's all you know. Because we were isolated, we weren't allowed to talk really to people outside of the group. Basically, they were demonized in our minds. Everyone in the system was out to get us, out to persecute us. And that was a really hard feeling to take, you know. And so that sort of made us sort of stick together maybe even more. It's like we're the group, we're the family, you know, and, you know, we're the only people in the world that are right and the only people that will be able to save the world.
But you three sisters were a group within the group. When did you decide that you were going to escape?
Well, we were split up from quite a young age, and only just recently we've been reunited. I left the group when I was 12. My sister Celeste left 5 years ago, and Juliana 2 years ago. And, you know, it's been a great experience.
Did you have any... were you able to help one another? Did you have any contact?
Yeah, I mean, it's very important. I mean, fortunately, when I left the group, I had my mother and younger siblings and grandparents who were able to help us, and you know, and when Celeste left and Juliana left, obviously they had that support structure already in place. But you know, there's so many people that don't have that available to them, and I mean, you don't have a bank account, you don't have a national insurance number, you know, your parents maybe one nationality, you're born in another country, so there's a lot of problems, you know, that people are facing, and you know, there's been many suicides from the second generation as well.
They talk about deprogramming, of taking people who have been victims of cults, whose minds have been manipulated or whose emotions have been manipulated. Does it work?
Yes, well, I don't know if I'd call it deprogramming, but, I mean, it certainly is a rewiring of everything you've been told, and it can take some time. The group doesn't allow you to have different perspectives, obviously, so gaining that experience and gaining different insights and different from different, you know, sources is really important. I think basically if you learn, I think it's about learning about the methods that they use on you, and to understand that and to understand how they got to you, not, you know, and how the vulnerability that you have, you know, that can really be helpful because it can stop you from falling into the same trap again.
Christina Jones, you're in London at the moment, and the terrorism events and the British amazement that people with the IQ, the necessary intellect to train and qualify as doctors, could get caught up in such an outlandish and extreme belief system wouldn't surprise you at all.
No, it wouldn't, because I mean, there's a disassociation that happens when you become part of a group, when you've been sucked into it, and when you're completely controlled by them, you know, and everything changes. You become more sort of childlike, and you sort of your intellect doesn't really have doesn't matter what that is. It's you shut down your thinking, your logic, your critical thinking skills.
Christina, when belief does harm, communities start to think, rational people in communities start to think, should we outlaw those beliefs? Should we prohibit such organisations?
I don't think you can actually outlaw belief. I think everybody has a right to believe what they would like to believe. But I think when it encroaches on other people, when it's certainly children, and especially if it includes criminal activity, harmful to other people and your human rights, I think then there is a problem. But I don't think it's about beliefs, really. I think it's the method rather than the message, because there's always be these cult leaders who may gain a following. So I think maybe education is the way to go to try and sort of...
Yeah.
To...
Christina,
so that people have a better understanding of how not to fall into these traps.
Christina Jones, I mean, the book is called Not Without My Sister.
Yes.
It's an interesting time because it reads now with a resonance that goes past just the children of God, or the family, as they call themselves now, and talks about sheds light on all religious extremism, doesn't it?
Yes, I hope so.
Thank you very much for talking to us from London today, Christina.
Thank you, Charles.
Okay, thank you. The book is in Australian bookshops. It's called Not Without My Sister. It's about the cult that we used to know as the Children of God that is now calling itself the family, but in a way, in its description of the methods of recruitment and control, it's about a whole lot more. We're on 1300 655 141.
Real Australia talking to real Australians. 1300 655 141. 1300 655 141.